Welcome to IndieCider, where we go beyond the game and meet the developers behind today's indie hits.
Hello, I'm your host, Ken Gagne, and welcome to a special bonus audio-only episode of IndieCider. This week, I'm interviewing Mr. Russ Pitts, co-founder of Polygon, former editor-in-chief of Escapist Magazine, co-founder of Take This, a nonprofit he represented previously on an episode of my other podcast, Polygamer, and also president of Flying Saucer Media. That is the role on which he's in IndieCider today. Russ is currently crowdfunding a video documentary series called Stage of Development. Much like this podcast, Stage of Development aims to chronicle the stories and passions and lives of indie game developers. Stage of Development originally went on Kickstarter in August of 2015, a Kickstarter that I backed. At that time, Stage of Development had a much broader focus of telling the stories of multiple individuals, both small and celebrity, in the gaming space. That Kickstarter did not reach its funding goal of $192,000. So Russ has retooled his project and has come back where he's asking for only $42,000 this time. The two biggest differences, in my opinion, are A, he's going to focus his stories on solely indie game developers, and B, solely those developers who can be found in Chicago, Illinois. By limiting his focus to a specific geographic region, he dramatically reduces the travel cost for him and his crew. Now, this is a Kickstarter that I have backed at the $50 level. I previously backed the original Stage of Development Kickstarter, which was canceled. And I've also backed Loading Ready Run's Kickstarter for a documentary about the Desert Bus fundraiser currently in its 10th year. That being a documentary that Loading Ready Run has contracted with Rust to produce. As you can imagine, I'm passionate about bringing the stories of indie game developers to life. Otherwise, this podcast you're listening to would not exist. So I want to speak to Russ about why he, too, has that passion and how he hopes to bring those stories to life in the video medium, whereas I'm primarily in the audio medium. I'm speaking to him in advance of the conclusion of his Kickstarter at Saturday, September 3rd, 2016. At this time, the Kickstarter has just shy of $10,000 in funding, which would put it at about 25% of its goal. You can find a link to the Kickstarter either in the show notes for this podcast, at twitter.com/stagedev, or at stageofdevelopment.com. And of course, you can find more episodes of IndieCider at indiecider.net, where we will shortly be resuming our regular broadcast of indie developer stories, paired with gameplay footage and uploaded to YouTube. Oh, and one last note about this interview. Russ was calling me from his cell phone. I prefer to do podcasts on Skype, but Russ was on location in Chicago and was taking time out of his day while he went and got his crew lunch to make a phone call to me. So I appreciate his time, and I certainly didn't expect him to go find an anechoic chamber with a USB headset to speak to me. Thanks for your time, Russ. Today, I'm honored to be speaking with my friend and former Polygamer podcast alumnus, Russ Pitts, president of Flying Saucer Media. Hello, Russ.
Hello, Ken. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time out of your busy day. I understand you're on location in Chicago.
Yeah, busier than I ever, busier than I even anticipated. I believe I told you I'd be free to talk a half an hour ago, and as it happens, we were on location here in Chicago, and I thought we would be in one location for most of the day, and the story evolved, and we took a side trip down to the library downtown as a part of this story we're working on right now, and we just got back, and I have just enough time while I'm supposed to be fetching burritos for the crew to talk to you about this.
Well, if their lunch is late, you can point them my way. I'll take full responsibility.
Well, you know, the blame goes with the job, so I'm happy to take it. But thank you for the offer.
So for those who are not yet familiar with the project you're working on, what is the elevator pitch for Stage of Development?
Stage of Development is human stories about people who make video games. It is a series of short documentaries, and in this case, documentaries about people who work in Chicago as indie game makers. We spend time with them, spending a day with the indie team, and you know, in their workspace or in their home, that may happen. Part of the reason why I love working with indie teams is that the stories of their lives really are wrapped up in the stories of what they're making. In a lot of cases, it's do or die for them. So there's a lot of drama wrapped up in their acts of creation, really. So we get to really spend a lot of time with them and see how who they are, what they have experienced, finds its way into the video games they're creating. And I'm hoping that, you know, I'm hoping that when we're done, people find these individuals and these teams that we decided to focus on as fascinating and high fun.
So you are currently crowdfunding to raise roughly exactly $42,891 to produce four short documentaries of about 10 to 20 minutes each. Is that correct?
That's correct. Except in as regards to four episodes, how we're saying it on the Kickstarter is at least four episodes. And I fully expect we'll come away from our week in Chicago with more than that. But honestly, I don't know yet how we're going to edit stories, what it's going to look like when we're done with them. We're talking with more than four teams of game creators. But it's entirely possible we may cut the episodes into four equal parts that each tell a part of the story, and that can include, you know, multiple people's points of view. My expectation is we'll come out of this week in Chicago with what we could consider six episodes of stage development, and then we'll, you know, post that as an update on Kickstarter. Hey, we did more than we thought, but before we actually came down here with the cameras, I didn't want to sell it.
So you talked a little bit about why you chose to focus on indie games and the stories that are told by the indie game development community. Why specifically Chicago for these debut films?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Chicago, for me, is a good example of one of those cities that people are very familiar with, but probably couldn't speak to the number of people or the specific people who are here making video games, right? Chicago has an outsized presence in popular culture. It's in a lot of movies. It's in a lot of TV shows. It was in The Dark Knight as Gotham City, right? It's a city, you know, you say Chicago and people know what you're talking about. When you say the Chicago indie video game scene, people have to really think about it. And I think it's because, as one of my interview subjects said, Chicago, people in Chicago have that Midwestern attitude where they don't really want to call attention to themselves. They're not grandstanders in general. So I think that applies here. It's also one of those places where I happen to know a lot of people here. I know who I should call to start getting connected with people who might want to be part of the story. So not only was it a place for me that I personally found interesting and I thought was a good opportunity to shine a light on something that a lot of people aren't very familiar with, meaning in the Chicago indie scene, but it was also a place where I felt I could get this particular production up and running relatively quickly and, frankly, relatively inexpensively compared to other places that we might eventually find ourselves. So it was a good, thinking about stage of development, if we were going to restart the campaign, if we were going to try again to publish this series, Chicago was always on my mind as a place we wanted to go. And so the opportunity to come here and do, you know, an entire series just in this city was something I couldn't resist.
I'm a little biased, but I got to ask, did you consider coming to Boston?
Yes. Yes, very much. In fact, I had, I'm probably biased. Ironically, probably biased against Boston in that my company has spent a significant amount of time there. So when I think about cities that are underexposed, I perhaps didn't give Boston its due credit considering how much work I've done there with Harmonix and other places. But you're absolutely right. It has an equivalently underexposed yet vibrant indie scene. And I think, you know, if we continue stages, if this series fully funds in Chicago and we're able to continue the series, that will definitely be a candidate for future seasons, I guess, if you want to call them that.
So the first Kickstarter for Stage of Development, which was a year ago, by the way, I can't believe it's been a full year already. It seems like it was just a few months ago.
I know. I was looking at Facebook photos to pull some, I don't know why, and I came across all the stuff I was posting last year about the Kickstarter. You know what? Honestly, it feels like both longer than a year ago and not as long as a year ago because so much has happened in so many different ways. But yeah, it's been a year since we did the first Stage Development Kickstarter.
So that first Kickstarter showed off some of the footage you had shot, some of which you've used as a pilot episode for your current project, such as the episode with Spry Fox. But there was also footage you shot of people who might not necessarily qualify as indie game developers, such as the Romero family. What's going to happen to those stories in that footage?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it highlights a big difference between this season of State of Development and what we had planned for last year. The focus last year was much more broad than what we're planning for this year. We're focusing strictly on indie game makers, strictly in Chicago. Last year, in addition to video game makers in general, in addition to indie game makers, we were also looking at video game makers in general, like John and Brenda Romero, who, although they have recently started their own independent video game company, I wouldn't necessarily call them indie. We were also looking at personalities in the video game space, like John Bain, who's better known as Total Biscuit, and Gavin Dunn, who's known as Miracle of Sound. The idea last year was that we would cover sort of a broad spectrum of people that you could find in video games, and the people we selected, like Lauren Lanning, for example, who created the Oddworld games, were people who I personally found interesting and who I thought were not exposed in the way that I wanted to treat them in stage development. One of the big pieces of feedback we got from that campaign was that, the audience we are potentially reaching with this type of content isn't necessarily interested in stories about certain types of people. And if we have to focus in one area, indie game makers seems to be the area where the most people are interested in what we might want to show. So that was a good learning, as we say, and it's certainly not, it's no skin off my nose to focus on indie game makers because I personally find them fascinating. That was one area where we could adjust and, alter the campaign this year in a way that I hope makes it more attractive or interesting to potential backers. As far as what's going to happen to some of that footage, we spent about 2.5 days shooting with Spry Fox in both their San Francisco and Seattle locations. And that footage became what we're calling the pilot episode for this year's campaign. And I love that episode. We also spent about a day, maybe, with the Romero family in their then home in Southern California. In the Silicon Valley, so it's just south of San Francisco. The plan for last year, at least the hope, was that we could then follow them to Ireland, where they now live. When we spoke with them last year, they were literally in the process of moving. Their house was covered with boxes. They were kind of embarrassed to be doing an interview there because there's boxes everywhere. We actually spent some time with them while they were packing up their kitchen with their children. It was very nice. Unfortunately, that piece of film that we have, and I spent a lot of time over the last year working on it, it's not a complete story. I could cut it and release it in a way that would be more or less self-contained, but it's not a complete story. It's John and Brenda Romero in transition. And John himself, as far as I'm concerned, John himself has been in transition for a number of years, right? He created Doom, for crying out loud, and has done a number of things since. But I've always had this feeling with John, I've known him for years, that his greatest act is yet to come, right? And I've wanted to be there for when that happens. When he lands on a trajectory where you could say, this is what John Romero's been working for his whole life, right? I mean, he's such a creative human. This is not someone who I don't think will be able to say his life is over after he created Doom. Like, his best work is yet to come. And I think with this studio that they have created in Galway, and the people they're working with, and the students they're working with, and the projects they're working on now, and their son's game, Gunman Taco Truck, just as one example, right? Like, working with a kid on a game about a gun-toting taco truck. It's ridiculous. And it's totally like this John Romero at a crossroads at a new point in his life with Brenda, where they're now doing these wonderful things. So to me, when I think about their story, I think about the first part we got. They're on the cusp of doing this new wonderful thing. And the second part, we didn't raise the money to get. So I'm hoping that as a part of this series, or there's some other way, it's a project that is still alive in my mind. This is a very long-winded answer, and I apologize, but there's a lot behind it. This is a project that is still alive in my mind, and you will see it when I have the second part of it.
I'm really encouraged to hear that, because I've met John, and he was a great keynote speaker at this small Apple II conference I attend every summer. He's a heck of a nice guy, really dedicated and passionate and talented. I'm looking forward to seeing what he and the rest of his family do. But one thing you mentioned, though, is that indie game development seems to be what is of most interest to those who will be consuming the media that you're producing. Who would you say is the target audience for Stage of Development?
That's a really good question, and it's a question I couldn't have answered last year. In fact, last year when I started the campaign for what was then Stage of Development, I didn't have a lot of data about who my audience was, what they wanted, and how much I could expect to raise from them. Like, I knew what I wanted to do. I knew the people I was able to reach in my previous jobs as part of other companies, but I didn't know what you could rightly consider my audience, right? I didn't know who those people were exactly, because I had never done anything independently. I had always worked under someone else's umbrella, under their existing structures, right? The process of that campaign was really informative. And I, you know, even though it didn't succeed, like, yeah, I felt bad. I was pretty despondent for a while there. But, like, I also knew that I had gathered really solid data about who exactly I could reach with my platform as an independent. And as it turned out, it was, you know, not entirely different from what I expected, but, you know, it wasn't a group of people who necessarily wanted to hear from YouTube stars about their level of fame, or, you know, or maybe not even necessarily, you know, Lauren Lanning, who's someone I find personally interesting, but hasn't yet kind of, you know, captured that sort of indie vibe. Like, it turns out the audience that I can call mine is an audience of people who either are indie gamers themselves, or fans of indie gamers, or people who want to become, indie gamers, people who are interested in video games as an art form and a craft. And that tends to be people who are, you know, entering it or already in it, or for whatever reason are just find themselves connoisseurs of, deeply creative, passionate, but independent creators, right? So, you know, similar to myself, like I have worked for large media companies, but I have always, I feel like, had an indie vibe that hasn't necessarily fit with the cultures where I've worked. So I don't think, you know, looking back, I don't think it's a huge surprise I don't think it should have been a huge surprise that I would find my audience are people who are much like myself, who are, more interested in people who are indie creators than who are or have been parts of larger corporate machines. But, you know, that's one of the things we learned. We also learned, what type level of funding that audience could reasonably be expected to bear. And it turns out it was less than what I was asking for last year. But we also learned that we can produce these things for less than we were thinking we could produce them for last year. Over the past year or more, in working with the same crew, I found ways that we can, you know, save a considerable amount of money. We're more efficient than we were last year, or than I thought we were last year. And that's part of the reason why we're focusing on Chicago. If we, you know, shoot multiple episodes in one location, that cuts roughly, three quarters of the cost in terms of travel and lodging and miscellaneous expenses related to moving around the country. So we learned a great deal, you know, and probably who our audience is and what they want was the biggest learning from last year, because that then informs everything else. But, you know, last year, all I knew was what I wanted to do, how much that would cost, you know, and how I wanted to do it. And I asked those who I have now realized are my audience to support their vision, and they didn't see it. So, okay. So we retooled, and I'm hoping this year we're more on track.
Well, it sounds like you've learned a lot about your budget, how to run the project, your core audience. You've talked a little bit about this, but what have you learned about running a Kickstarter campaign since last year?
Oh, goodness. Probably more than I can remember to relate to. The biggest thing I learned about running a Kickstarter campaign is that I had no idea how to run a Kickstarter campaign. you know, which is a good thing to learn. Not necessarily while you're trying to do it, but this is how we learn things, right? It's like I say in the Batman films, why do we fall down? It's so that we can learn to pick ourselves up. I think I fell down pretty hard in last year's Kickstarter. I think we ultimately got close to 12% funding. Which is not great. And through that process, I learned that, you know, I didn't know enough about how to communicate with an audience, you name it, really. Like, the tiers, how should they be priced, what should you offer, how do you group the things that you put in the tier, how do you communicate those tiers. I think the biggest thing we fell down on last year was in adequately communicating to those who would be our backers what they were backing. We knew what it was going to be. And I think there was a solid core of people who were already familiar with my work from Polygon and elsewhere, who, you know, saw the vision without having to be shown it. But, you know, that was an unreasonable thing of us to expect people who weren't necessarily already familiar with my work. And at the end of the day, you know, doing this kind of campaign, you're speaking to a lot of different types of people. And, you know, someone who might have the money to fund you, someone who might be familiar with your work, or someone who might not. Either of those things, right? So people who are already fans of mine, whether they're backing or not, they're going to be amplifying our message, and we need to be able to capture the people they're speaking to very quickly and very effectively with what our project is, you know, and what we're asking of them, and what, you know, what we're proposing that they help fund. So I'm hoping that this year not only do we have a pilot video that demonstrates more or less exactly the type of product they're going to be looking at, just about different people. But, you know, I feel like the intro video that we produced better reflects what they can expect. I think the campaign, the verbiage on the campaign is a little shorter, but more to the point. We've got some good information there about the people we're showcasing and why. So, you know, that touches on every aspect of the campaign, which is why I say basically everything about a Kickstarter campaign is what we've learned we could do better. But really, when you look at it, it boils down to effectively communicating with the potential backers what we're asking them to help create. And I think we've done a much better job this year of communicating that. I don't know if we've done enough, but I guess that's what we're going to find out.
Right. At the time of this recording, you have about 24 days left in the campaign. By the time that this podcast airs, it'll be about 2.5 weeks, and you're on good track so far. You said, I think, in the first week you raised more money than the entire previous Kickstarter campaign raised in its entire run?
Yeah, percentage-wise, we did better. We've raised a higher percentage of the funding we were asking for than we raised in the entire run of the Kickstarter last time. Which is fantastic. I think we, you know, by the time the Kickstarter looked like a lost cause last year, I think some people went through their pledges. I think we had gotten somewhere over $30,000 in funding last year before that started happening. This year, our entire ask is $42,891, right? So our entire ask this year is close to, you know, slightly more than what we raised last year, which was not even 20%. So just in those terms, we're asking for so much less, and it's a much more realistic goal, I feel, just based on what we were able to raise last year with all of our, you know, with all of our faults and mistakes. And as we speak, we are either at or very close to 20% fully funded. So my hope is that within the next couple of days, certainly by Saturday from now, we will have hit or be very close to 30%, which is on track for successful funding. So I'm not going to be. I've done production my whole life, you know, like just, you know, I'm not happy with a business opportunity or a project until paper is actually signed, and sometimes until a check is even cleared. I've learned this year with one story I could tell you. So I won't be, you know, I won't stop biting my nails on this until the Kickstarter actually closes and we've raised all the money that we're asking for. But that said, given where we are now and how far we've come with the funding, I feel fairly.
Excellent. Well, it seems like there's good reason to be optimistic. I am a proud backer of the project because it's so similar to what I do on this podcast, interviewing indie game developers, and I would love to see more of those stories told in video. Before we go, I just have one last very important question for you. What kind of burrito are you getting?
You know what? I can't actually eat burritos. I'm gluten. I have a celiac, so I have to get the soft corn tacos. I generally go for barbacoa if that's on offer, which I believe it is where I'm going here. So my my answer to your question would be barbacoa soft taco.
Well, enjoy and good luck with the rest of your shoot in Chicago, Russ.
Hey, thank you so much, Ken. I really appreciate it. And if we do Holy Fun and we then carry on to look at another location, I'll put in 3 votes for Boston on your behalf, and we'll definitely let you know when we're in town.
Your crew always has a couch to crash on at my place.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Russ. Have a good day.
Thank you, Ken.
This has been Indie Cider, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at indiecider.net.